And welcome to Medieval Murder, the podcast that brings all things gruesome and historical to the comfort of your own home or car or wherever it is you're listening from. My name is Hannah Prettyman, and I'm here with my father, Kevin Prettyman.
Hello.
To discuss some of the most famous and infamous murders that took place in the medieval and early modern periods. Medieval Murder came to be first as a blog, then as an Instagram, and now as a podcast after I finished my master's dissertation on homicide in early medieval England. The podcast will feature some of the most famous murders in medieval history, some mini-episode series on different types of medieval murders, and interviews with historians and history enthusiasts alike. Happy holidays from everyone here at Medieval Murder. Today, we will be discussing a smattering of medieval murdered popes, a potential series that could also be called Why You Shouldn't Choose the Name John.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Murdered popes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Swiss Guard one doing their job.
No. First up today is Pope John I. It is unknown when Pope John I was born, and the earliest period of his life that is known was that he was a deacon in Rome during the early 500s. A letter from this period refers to him being a supporter of the anti-pope Laurentius. In this letter, which was addressed to the pope at the time, Pope Symmachus, John admits to being a supporter of the anti-pope, but also admits that he was wrong in this choice and begs forgiveness from Symmachus.
Wait. What is an anti-pope?
So, an anti-pope is basically someone within the Catholic Church who is trying to be pope at the same time as the pope. So they're like a pope competitor.
Okay, so they're not like anti-pope. They're just like, I want the job.
Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
Yes.
That there was anti-popes. I was raised Catholic, but I didn't realize.
I mean, there hasn't been one in probably 500 years. Maybe more.
With all the turmoil in today's world, maybe it's going to start up again. Never know.
Yeah. I would assume that he was granted forgiveness given that he becomes the pope almost 2 decades later.
Okay.
Yeah. So, John was elected pope, otherwise known as the Bishop of Rome, in 523. Shortly after he took the papal throne, Pope John I was asked by the king of the Ostrogoths, Theodoric the Great, to journey to Constantinople.
So, he's journeying to Constantinople to the country of Ostrogoths?
No. He's the king of the Ostrogoths. But no, the Ostrogoths do not live in Constantinople. Constantinople would technically be part of Byzantium at this point, I think.
Okay, and enlighten me on the Ostrogoths.
So the Ostrogoths were a Germanic people. So they lived kind of in the now known region of Germany.
Okay.
Yeah.
When he was the king.
He was the king of the Ostrogoths, Theodoric the Great.
Okay, and he's going to go be visited by John in Constantinople.
No. Theodoric the Great, who is the king of the Ostrogoths, asked Pope John I to go to Constantinople.
Oh, just asked him to go. He's not there.
No, he's not there.
Oh, okay. I thought we had our murderer already.
No. Okay. So, initially, Pope John I did not want to make the journey, which would have been tiring and dangerous and would have taken up to 20 days, because at this point in his life, he was getting older and frailer.
Okay. Yeah, most popes seem older and frailer.
Yes. They definitely become pope later in life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because the other guys, he's waiting 2 decades.
Yeah.
From when he was an anti-pope.
Yeah. However, Theodoric insisted as the journey was important for political and religious reasons. So Pope John I made his way to Constantinople along with an entourage of several Catholic bishops and Roman senators. If you hear any tippy-tappies or any weird noises, that would be our dogs.
Dogs in the house.
Once they reached Constantinople, the group was received by the Byzantine Emperor Justin I. The visit with the Byzantine Emperor was a relative success, and Pope John I returned to Rome, having restored peace between the two regions, at least for a short period of time.
Okay, so I was about to ask why the one king was asking him to go to Constantinople, but it was like a peacekeeping mission.
Yeah, it was basically a peacekeeping mission.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you send the Pope, and that's a big deal.
He's a big emissary of peace. I believe that.
I think we'll see later that they're not always
big. Well, maybe they started out as emissaries of peace. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, in this case.
Not in this one, but like later, if we do another episode, there's definitely some, instead of being murdered popes, there's definitely some murderous popes. So we'll.
Got to keep the power.
Yeah, keep the power. So now Pope John I has created peace, theoretically.
Okay.
Yes, and so he returns back to Italy. However, when he returns, King Theodoric was suspicious about possible collusion between him and the Byzantine emperor. So, for whatever reason that this suspicion is based, Theodoric immediately has Pope John I arrested and thrown into prison in Ravenna, the Ostrogothic capital in Italy.
Okay, so the Ostrogothic king seems a little paranoid here.
He's a little paranoid. He's a little paranoid. Yeah. So now John is in prison as the Pope. He's most likely in terrible conditions, and he died from neglect and starvation in 526. So he was only Pope for 3 years.
How long was he? Do we know how long he was in prison before he passed away?
I'm guessing about a year.
Okay.
Yeah. So while this is not technically an outright murder, Pope John I is later honored as a martyr and becomes Saint John I. Plus, that's a pretty awful way to die, coming home after a semi-successful mission and just being thrown in prison to die.
Yes, and was there a benefit?
Of killing Pope John I?
Yeah, I mean, did they like replace him with their own kind of Pope guy?
Backed by the Ostrogoths? I'm not actually sure, but probably.
Okay.
Probably. It was probably a political move.
Now did, I don't know if you know or not, but did peace between the Ostrogoths and the Byzantine Empire continue?
No.
Okay.
No. It did not.
So it could be for one of two reasons.
Maybe he didn't really want peace.
Well, maybe he didn't really want peace. Well, we got three reasons. Maybe the death of the Pope got the Byzantines upset.
Yeah.
Or maybe he was right and there was some sort of collusion going on.
That could be too.
More mysteries.
Yeah. So that was our first medieval murdered Pope of this episode. Our next one's going to be a little longer. For a second medieval murder pope of the day, we'll be talking about Pope John VIII, which is why this is also entitled Why You Shouldn't Choose the Name John.
Oh, got it.
Yes. So, Pope John VIII was born sometime in the early 9th century in Rome. Not much is known of his life before he became pope, other than that he was an archdeacon in the Catholic Church for around 20 years.
Okay.
So, I'm guessing that by the time he's pope, he's probably about 50.
I was going like 40s, but maybe 50.
40s or 50s, I think.
Because, you know, in those times, people got in positions faster, younger, it seemed like.
I don't know. Who knows what his background is, so he might have had some rich.
Had a little help?
Paper, parents. Yeah. Could have had some help. So, Pope John VIII was elected Pope of the Catholic Church in 872 after the death of the previous Pope, Adrian II. After he became Pope, John VIII supported the release of Methodius from a Moravian prison. Methodius was an archbishop and had begun providing the liturgy in the Slavonic language, something which angered the Carolingian King Louis the German, as well as the Catholic bishops in the area. So Methodius was thrown in prison in 870 and was left there until Pope John VIII was able to get him released in 873. So he was in prison for 3 years in a Moravian prison.
See, I don't understand. I mean, I can see the king getting upset because this guy's putting the liturgy in his language so that the people might be more aligned with the Catholic Church. But what I don't understand is why the bishops would be upset about that.
Well, I think a lot of bishops at the time thought that the liturgy was, you know, sacred and should only be provided in Greek or Latin.
This is true. I mean, we had Latin Mass up until like the 50s, 60s.
Yeah. So now Methodius has been in prison for 3 years. When he was finally released, Pope John VIII did allow him to continue preaching in the Slavonic languages and even allowed him to translate the Bible.
That's good.
Yeah. So that's...
How did he get released?
I think the Pope pulled some strings.
Okay. But then he stayed in the country that imprisoned him.
Yeah.
And was allowed to... Okay.
Yeah.
I see some payoff.
Yeah, there was probably some payoff happening. Yeah. And as we'll see later, this Pope is not scared of using the coffers.
Okay.
So the next several years of John's popehood were filled with what I would describe as the medieval religious version of high school drama.
Okay. First, you see this on Disney or what?
Right. First, due to the continued Saracen invasions against southern Italy, which are kind of the Middle East region now, are the Saracens.
Right, they're going to be a Muslim religion.
Yes.
Okay.
So they've been invading southern Italy. So because of this, Pope John VIII allied himself with the Frankish Emperor Louis II to try to kind of take on...
Get a little balance of power going there, get some more people.
Yeah, get some more people. However, Louis died shortly after this, and so Pope John VIII then crowned King Charles II of France, also known as Charles the Bald, as Emperor of Western Europe. So during this time, there's an emperor of Western Europe, and then there's an emperor of the Byzantine Empire, too. So now Charles the Bald is the emperor of Western Europe.
So is this all coming from the power of the papacy?
Pretty much. Okay. I mean, there's some other strings being pulled, but for a very long time, the Pope was actually also the Holy Roman Emperor.
Okay.
So now at this point, that's not happening anymore. Pope and then emperor.
But so he's appointing people emperors of different places or anointing them.
Yeah. So he basically chooses Charles the Bald.
Okay.
I'm assuming he's bald. Assume.
Got a lot of bald guys in medieval history.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he basically picked King Charles II, as far as I know, because he was willing to fight against the Saracens. So this allowed fighting against the Saracens to continue until Charles the Death in 877. So he wasn't emperor of Western Europe for very long.
Okay.
He was probably only emperor of Western Europe for two years, maybe.
All right.
Okay. So during Charles II's reign, the Cardinal Bishop of Porto, Formosus, began harassing Pope John VIII due to his disagreement over the crowning of King Charles II. The harassment supposedly got so bad, which I don't know what the harassment involved, but got so bad that Pope John VIII excommunicated Formosus from the church and he fled Rome.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But just to provide a little more insight into the drama, I want to note that even after being excommunicated, Formosus did later become pope.
Okay, so we've got a long history of people starting something, being opposed to what's going on in the papacy, and then later becoming the pope.
Yes.
Okay. Do we know where he went when he fled Rome?
I do not know.
Okay.
I did not look that in depth into Formosus.
Okay.
Yeah. So after Charles II's death, several men attempted to step into the shoes of the Western Emperor. They were kind of all vying for power during, like, after his death in 877. But it wasn't until 881 that Pope John VIII crowned the Frankish King Charles III, also known as Charles the Fat, as emperor.
So we're assuming he's fat.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's like a 4-year period here where nobody's emperor of Western Europe.
So makes you wonder why you need an emperor of Western Europe.
Yeah.
You can go 4 years without it.
It's possible during this time that Pope John VIII is the one who's just kind of pulling the strings until he's
in charge.
Yeah. So throughout this entire period, Pope John VIII was defending the papal states on the front lines, leading battles against the Saracens, as well as acting as an admiral on the sea after founding the Pontifical Navy.
Okay, so he's out there.
He's out there. He's out fighting there. Him.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like what we see later, or maybe at this time with like kings of England
leading. Fighting it. Yeah. Yeah. Not like nowadays where leaders don't go fight.
Sit in the war room, whatever it is. The situation room.
Yeah, the situation room. Yeah.
Watch it on drone cam.
Yeah. So during his reign, Pope John VIII also spent a lot of time and money reinforcing the walls surrounding the Vatican, as well as restoring the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls, which had been damaged in a Saracen raid. He also restored the nearby monastery and some of the dwellings of Roman citizens that had also been damaged in the surrounding area.
Okay, so the Saracens really got up into Italy.
Yes, they did.
So they got to Rome, maybe further.
Yeah, because they're also coming by sea.
Now, you've been to the Vatican.
Yeah.
So, at this point in time, is St. Paul's within the walls of Vatican City, or is it outside? I'm just trying to figure out if Vatican
City expanded. I think this is a different basilica.
Okay.
This is the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls.
Okay.
I don't know. Okay. But yeah. So,
okay.
So I don't know. I don't know if it's inside or outside. I think at this point it's inside, but this is like a different basilica outside.
Okay.
Yeah. So he spends all this money to fix things for the Roman citizens, which, you know, I guess isn't really done at this time. Spending papal money on fixing
stuff for the citizens of Rome.
Yeah. So, however, all of this restoration and the founding of the papal navy, as well as the funding of the battles against the Saracens, led the papal vaults to be heavily depleted.
Uh-oh, we're going to need to replenish those bad boys.
Yeah. So this supposedly provided some of the motivation behind Pope John VIII's assassination in 882.
Okay.
Yeah. Other possible motives included his inability to stop the Saracen raids and his lack of support from the Carolingians as his reign went on.
Okay, you know what my next question is going to be.
What are the Carolingians?
Exactly.
Yeah, so the Carolingians, the Carolingians are kind of the Franks. So they're like the western half of Western Europe, except not Spain.
Okay, so like France.
Yeah, like France. Mostly France.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's motivations behind this assassination in 882, and it's thought that Pope John VIII was actually murdered by his own clerics.
Yeah, I think I could believe that.
Yeah.
I mean,
However, they were kind of a vicious bunch, and he was supposedly poisoned and then beaten to death with clubs.
So it was more than one rogue cleric.
No, it was multiple clerics. It was multiple clerics, I'm picturing, in, you know, his...
Yeah,
it could have happened at the table, it could have happened in his bedroom, because he's gone sleepy after the poison, and just beat with clubs.
Ruthless.
Yes, yes.
So...
Ruthless clerics.
So, like, the clerics would probably be... Cardinals,
deacons, archdeacons,
bishops and whatnot.
Bishops, priests. I don't think any priests would have gotten in there because they probably would have gotten in trouble if it was just a bunch of priests.
Now, do we have the lineage of who becomes Pope next, and do you think he was involved?
I'm going to go with the next one is not involved.
Okay.
And I don't know why I think that, but I just think that. But his successor was Marinus the First.
Okay. So he didn't get killed because he's not named John.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think. No. No, I think he died not in a bad way. As far as I can tell.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's, you know, Pope's named John died. So far in history.
So there's a lot of treachery similar to what you'd see around kings. at this point in time.
Oh,
of trying to
yeah.
take control, power grabs.
Oh, yeah.
Money. Now, do we know what the church did to refill its coffers?
You know, no. No, okay. That's something I could definitely look into, though, because...
No, I'm just... I mean, if that was one of the motivating factors... We don't know for sure that that was a motivating factor.
Yeah.
I would think maybe... It might have been more that he wasn't getting it done with the Saracens.
Yeah.
But then with it being clerics, it could be, hey, man, we don't have enough money. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like he was trying his best. He was leading battles. He founded the Pontifical Navy.
So like the first guy, he was like thrown in prison.
And just starved to death.
But like this next one, I mean, there was like a legal action that took place to put the Pope in prison. But the next guy, did they do any like trial? Did they like try and prosecute any of these guys?
I don't think prosecution was a big thing.
Just survival of the fittest?
Yeah, I'm not, I mean, I'm sure there are legal records that survive. I've only personally seen legal records survive from about 1300 onward.
Okay.
I'm sure there's others.
And what, we're 600s now?
We're in 800s.
800s,
with
okay.
John the Eighth, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you liked this series, let us know, and we will bring in some more murdered popes and even murderer popes.
Murderer popes?
Yeah, there's some murderer popes. Yeah, there's a lot of weird things being done in the Vatican for a couple popes. We might even have to jump back to the classical period. Take a look at some of those guys too.
Okay, so what they say is absolute power can corrupt absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for listening to Medieval Murder. If you have any listener questions, comments, or topic suggestions, please feel free to reach out via our Twitter account, @MurderMedieval, our Instagram account, @MedievalMurder, or via email at info.medievalmurder@gmail.com. Also, check out our new merch available on our website, medievalmurder.org. For a limited time until the end of January, we are offering a 15% discount for anyone who makes a purchase using the promo code MURDER. Happy New Year from all of us at Medieval Murder. Tune in later for our next podcast.
Happy 2023, everybody!
Woo!